front page drama, Murder by Proxy, is the dramatization of a true detective story. One of the many baffling cases that were solved by the late Ellis Parker, who was a living prototype of the celebrated detective of fiction, Sherlock Holmes. In next Sunday's American Weekly, you will find a most interesting biographical article on the life of the late Ellis Parker and some of his famous cases entitled The Unhappy End of Our Own Sherlock Holmes. Ellis Parker handled over 30,000 criminal investigations and solved all but 12 of his 300 murder cases. He solved his first case, the theft of his own horse and buggy, before he was 18, and then went on to build an amazing record that will rank with the great detectives of the French Sûreté or Britain's Scotland Yard. Be sure to read The Unhappy End of Our Own Sherlock Holmes in next Sunday's American Weekly, the magazine with the greatest circulation in the world that comes to you with your Hearst Sunday newspaper. And now to our story, Murder by Proxy. Early one morning in March 1922, Ellis Parker was summoned to a small town in New Jersey by the local chief of police.
Come in, Ellis.
Thank you.
I'm sorry to rout you out so early in the morning, but we need you. This is the kind of a case you like.
Murder, eh? Victim was seated in that rocking chair by the window. Killed by a blast from a shotgun.
Oh, yes, but how did you know?
I've got eyes, haven't I? I can see that much on the first glance around the room.
Well, by George, you're right, Parker. Yeah, his name was John Brunan, owner of a small circus. He was sitting in this rocker, just like you said. He was shot by a blast from a shotgun, fired from the lawn outside this window here. Must have happened around 8 o'clock last night, according to the coroner.
You examined the lawn outside?
Yes, sirree, the first thing. I found one pair of footprints. I had the lawn roped off so no one could track it all up. A thaw and the spring rain made the ground very soft.
Well, that's good. Let's go out and have a look at those footprints.
Okay. You know, the funny thing about this case is that everybody around this neighborhood was home, but not a soul heard the shot.
Oh? Well, let's see those footprints.
Now, they come in from that board sidewalk down there, up to these bushes here.
That train explains your first question, Chief.
What do you mean?
Why, nobody heard the shot. The racket that train made in passing would easily cover the single discharge of a shotgun.
Well, I'll be dang. Gosh, I never thought of that. What do you know? Now then, Parker, what do you make of these footprints?
They're made by a rather small man, a rather nervous temperament. You can tell by the uneven length of the sides and the variable pressure of the feet into this soft earth. Who owns the dog?
A murdered man. We found him running around this morning and tied him up.
Anyone hear that dog barking last night?
No, that's another part of the mystery. Now, that's a good watchdog. Why didn't he raise the devil when the stranger approached the house?
Oh, that's easy. The killer wasn't a stranger. He was someone that both the dog and the master knew quite well. Someone the dog was used to seeing at the house.
I guess you're right again, Parker. Gosh darn it, why don't I ever think of those things?
Tell you something else, Chief. The killer was not only familiar with the dog and his master, but he made a careful study of his victim's habits and those train schedules.
I won't argue with you, Parker, but I'd like to know why.
Well, first he knew that the murdered man made a habit of sitting in that rocker close to the window, reading in the full light of that floor lamp. That made him an excellent target. Second, the murderer knew that a train went by here at 8 o'clock every night. The trains made such a racket they'd cover the sound of the shot. A good target like that, one shot would be enough.
Hey, dang it all. It looks like you got the case pretty nice solved in the first 10 minutes.
Well, hold on, Chief. I'm not quite that good. All right, well, let's go in the house again and have a look at the dead man's papers.
Yeah, okay, Parker. I know right where they are. In a desk in the parlor. I seen them there this morning.
You say this Brunan owned a small circus. I don't think they've got a list of his employees.
Why, you think one of them did the job?
Well, we would have a better knowledge of the dead man's habits. He's very familiar with his dog, have a very good knowledge of train schedules.
I'll be hanged. You sure do make this thing look simple. Well, there's the desk. Help yourself.
Ah, there we are. Company payroll ledger 1921-22. Fresh entries in here. Marr. Harry Marr.
I know him, Parker.
Oh?
Marr, yeah. That's Boone's brother-in-law, actor's manager of the circus. Now, wait a minute.
Here's a picture of him.
Oh, well, that clears him of the actual shooting. He's a big, stocky fellow. Big feet, steady nerves. No, he didn't actually do the shooting. May have been mixed up in it, though.
Yeah, I thought of that.
Charles Powell, you know him?
No, I can't say I do. Charles Powell. I only know more on account of him being a relative.
I see. Well, I think I'll take a little walk, Chief. Be back shortly. You stay here and take charge.
Yeah, okay, Parker. I'll see you later.
Look at that interesting walk I had, Chief. See this?
Yeah?
The stock of a shotgun I found in the mud at the end of this street. After the murder, the killer ran down the street to a car he had waiting. Evidently, he wanted a quick getaway, so they didn't bring the car up on the street here. Mud was too deep. It's my guess the killer dropped the stock of the gun when he nervously tried to take it apart before hiding it in the car.
Quick getaway. Now, that reminds me.
Oh, of what?
Some fella came into the station last night as mad as a hornet. Said he'd been forced into the ditch by a fast car.
Yeah?
That was about the time of the murder.
You get the motorist's name?
Yeah, we took it down. The reason we didn't do anything about his complaint was he said he had written down the license number of the car, but had lost it.
No, that's too bad. Now, Chief, you send out a searching party to look around and see if they can find the rest of this gun. The killer probably threw it away somewhere close to here. If they find it, have them call me at this number in Philadelphia.
Philadelphia?
Uh-huh.
Is that where you're going?
Yeah. Place the owner of this gun.
The police recovered the remainder of the shotgun, and Parker traced it by its numbering and odd appearance to a Belgian maker who had a dealer in Philadelphia. The dealer had sold the gun to a man in Hazleton, Pennsylvania, but he had lost the gun when it was confiscated by a game warden. The state had sold the gun with a number of other confiscated weapons to a Philadelphia pawnbroker. Parker retraced his steps to Philadelphia and the pawnbroker's shop.
Yes, sir, Mr. Parker. I'd be glad to be of any assistance I can. I remember the gun, all right, because of it being a Belgian make. Isn't often you see one like that.
I take a good look at this picture. That's the man you sold a gun to?
Yeah, sure. No mistaking that fellow. I remember him quite well now. He said he was a circus man. Some little old circus I'd never heard of.
Was there anyone with this fellow when he purchased the gun?
Yeah, let me think now. Yeah, was. Yeah, I remember he was with a circus, too. That's right, because we talked about circuses and things for quite a few minutes.
Now then, take your time. Don't hurry, but concentrate and see if you can remember anything about the other man.
Well, now, as I remember, this fellow in the picture here, he's quite a big guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the other fellow was slim.
Yeah.
No way near as tall as the man in the picture.
Yeah, good.
Seems to me as if he was nervous, jerky kind of guy.
Well, I won't take up any more of your time now, but I may be back later on. Here's my card, though, just in case any development should occur.
Oh, thank you.
I'm at Mount Holly up in Jersey. You can call me there. I'll be home later this afternoon.
Well, Parker, you got your call, and here I am. Have any luck?
A little, yes, but not near enough. I found out definitely that Marr purchased that gun.
Huh?
But I had the Philadelphia police question Marr, but he had an airtight alibi. He was seen in Philadelphia about the time of the shooting.
Mm.
Then I located his crony, this fellow Charlie Powell, across the river in Camden. But just like Marr, he had a perfect alibi. I had nothing to hold either one of them on, Chief.
But you're sure they did the killing, huh?
Absolutely. Marr had a fast car. He drove Powell down here. Powell did the job, and they rushed back to Philly and began showing themselves around, establishing their alibis.
It looks like you're stymied then.
I'm sure Powell did the killing. Marr was the brains of the whole thing. What if I could get Powell up here without Marr knowing? I think I could get enough out of Powell to convict both of them. But I can't arrest Powell because that would warn Marr.
Now, then how can you get Powell?
Well, it isn't legal, but then neither is murder. I'd swear on a Bible those two are guilty. Now, listen. You get one of your best men. The two of you drive down to Camden and pay a quiet call on Powell. When he least expected, grab him, put him in your car, and rush him back here.
Okay, Parker. And get just the man for the job.
Good.
You leave it to us. We'll have Powell for you. Don't worry.
Be careful now. Don't let him suspect what you're going to do. Take it easy and don't try to knock him out. No physical violence. Talk quietly to him. Wait for an opportunity, then slip the handcuffs on him. Tell him he's under arrest, but don't tell him where you're taking him. Rush him into the car and start driving.
Yeah, I got it all right, Parker. Don't worry. I know how to do it. We'll have him back here tonight. Is Mr. Powell home, please?
Yeah, what do you want?
We'd like to see him about lining up a job for the coming season.
Well, just wait out there. I'll find out if he'll see you.
Yeah.
Charlie, come here a minute.
Who is it?
A couple of big fellas out there. Look like dicks to me. They want to see you. Don't like the looks of them. That's awful funny.
So that's it, huh? Just what Harry said. A couple of Parker's men. I know what they're trying to pull here. They're trying to snatch me out of the county and run me up to Mount Holly and put the third degree on me. Okay, I'll cry. I'll show them.
What are you going to do?
Fool them, that's what. They got nothing on me. Cops here okayed my alibis. Let me go. Now listen. You get on the phone right away, see? Call the cops and tell them to rush over here in a squad car. Take two men are trying to kidnap your husband. Now hurry up. I'll stall for a while and you let them in just before the cops get here.
Okay, I'll call, but first you go up and lock yourself in the bedroom. Go ahead now. I'll take care of them, boys. Hello, operator. Operator, get me police headquarters and hurry. Hurry, it's an emergency.
Yeah? Hello, Alice Parker speaking.
Just a moment, Mr. Parker. Candid is calling. Go ahead, Candid. Ready with Mr. Parker.
Hello, Parker.
Yeah?
This is District Attorney Caldwell. Candid calling.
Oh, yes, Mr. Carr. What can I do for you?
We're holding two of your men down here. They were arrested on a complaint by Mrs. Powell, who said they were trying to kidnap her husband.
Yeah?
Now, you'd better hop down here in a hurry and identify those men. give me a full explanation of this whole affair.
All right.
I don't like your methods, Parker, and I don't mind telling you I'm pretty darn sore about your strong-arm tactics.
Sorry.
So get busy and come down here at once.
Okay, dear. I'll be there shortly. I really am sorry about the little mix-up, but I've got enough on Powell now so that you can hold him for me. Come on. Just a few minutes before you called, I had another call. This was from a motorist whose car was thrown into a ditch by a collision with a speeding car heading south out of Riverside. This happened on the night of the murder, the time approximately 7:07.
Well, that's all very interesting, Mr. Parker. What's all that got to do with holding Powell on a murder charge?
Because he was in that car. The car was driven by Harry Marr, who planned the murder and hired Powell to do the job.
Can you prove that?
Yes. Marr's car collided and knocked the other car into the ditch. The driver took Marr's license number, wrote it on a piece of paper, but unfortunately he mislaid it. He found it again this evening and called me a minute or so before you did. I checked that license number with Philadelphia Records. As I expected, it was Marr's license. Marr stood to gain control of the circus and all his brother-in-law's property upon Brunin's death. Marr promised Powell a share in the spoils to do the job. He drove Powell to Riverside. They did the job and drove back a short distance to Camden and Philly at breakneck speed and established alibis. I get Powell in here, confront him with his evidence, and he'll supply enough evidence to break the case wide open.
Everything worked out just as Parker had planned. Powell confessed, supplying enough details to enable Parker to break Marr's alibi and to make his case airtight. Both men were tried and convicted, Marr receiving a life sentence and Powell 20 years. You have just heard the front page drama, Murder by Proxy, one of the many exciting stories of murder cases solved by the late Ellis Parker, one of America's greatest detectives, who is the central figure in a feature article entitled The Unhappy End of Our Own Sherlock Holmes, which is to be found in next Sunday's American Weekly, the magazine with the greatest circulation in the world, which comes to you with your Hearst Sunday newspaper.